When I arrived in South Sudan, I was, to be frank with you, extremely excited for a number of reasons. First, I was entering or landing in Africa's youngest state. Mm-hmm. And that's quite exciting because Africa has gone through many, many years, decades of experience in forging statehood after independence. So here mm-hmm. is our opportunity to draw from all the lessons we've learned in the last 5 to 6 decades and to apply those lessons in this beautiful country mm-hmm. to ensure that statehood is what represents the aspiration of the people who celebrated freedom here in South Sudan. So I'm quite excited to be here mm-hmm. Because of that. Secondly, since I've come in South Sudan, I have seen the vast opportunity that this country has. It has some of the largest, in fact, the largest mm-hmm. arable land in the region, and over 60 or some say even 80% of the land is arable. Mm-hmm. And we know that many of the successful countries in independence history across the world, especially in Asia, what they put forward in their economic governance is agriculture, is self-reliance in food production. And if you have such beautiful, vast land that has the potential to become the breadbasket of the region, this is, for me, quite exciting because there are a lot of technology, a lot of lessons, a lot of experiences that have been learned mm-hmm. to harness this resource. It has a vast mineral resources. I hear, of course, oil is now the primary resource. It has some of the vast youth population, very young people who are excited, who are determined to not just go into government, but to go into the private sector, to become entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. to become academics. And I'm quite excited since I've met some of these young people. I have lived in many countries across the world, and I have seen the sizable and productive diaspora community from South Sudan. Some of them are renowned academics in some of the best institutions in the world. I was taught by South Sudanese in my university in Liberia, and I've had South Sudanese friends, professors, when I taught in Europe, in America. And so it has not just a diaspora, but a productive diaspora that, if it is harnessed, it can accelerate statehood and economic vibrancy that South Sudan should represent in the region. So this is my excitement, and right. I really look forward to working with the people and the leadership of South Sudan to actualize this vast potential.
Great. Now, this might be one of your first interviews that you're giving to radio, and we'd really, really like to know, what are some of your priorities as you embark on this new journey as the resident representative of the United Nations Development Program in South Sudan? What is so urgent? What do you think needed to be focused on?
Right now, I believe that South Sudan needs, And I see that the leadership also sees that, to put behind it the history of conflict and violence and to achieve sustainable peace. That is the hallmark for moving the state forward. And I think that will, and with the support and the cooperation, of course, the leadership of the government and people of South Sudan, that hopefully should be our focus, sustainable peace across the length and breadth of this country, so that every citizen can feel secure, safe, and ready to contribute to viable statehood. That's one key priority. And that should then follow with South Sudan laying solid foundations for statehood. Mm-hmm. There are many countries in our continent that made a lot of mistakes at independence. We forgot that statehood is not just the Declaration of Independence. It's a hard work to build foundations for institutions that provide services to its people, that guarantee rule of law and access to justice, that ensure compromise in politics and the transition of power. That is fundamental for viable, functioning statehood. And I think this is the project that South Sudan embarks upon. Every citizen of South Sudan, building a civic society, building institutions across the length and breadth of the country so that it can achieve vibrancy in its viable statehood. The third is that you build foundation for sustainable development. Economic governance is an important error that we've made, and I said, in many countries in the continent. Focusing, latching ourselves, getting ourselves trapped to a single primary commodity, forgetting the many other diverse resources we have that we can create a multiple, a diversified economy that is governed by robust institutions. That is the path, and that is the promise that South Sudan has, because you have a lot of lessons, as I said, to learn from many countries.
Yes. And how is UNDP going to help in all these priorities that you mentioned? What role can UNDP play in helping South Sudan achieve these goals?
Currently, UNDP is working and supporting the Ministry of Finance and Development as they review the National Development Strategy. That is the place to begin. A conversation is now taking place under the leadership of the ministry across the length and breadth of South Sudan with its citizens about what should be the priorities for development. Once that exercise is completed and priorities are determined, then around those priorities, a development strategy is produced. UNDP wants to commit itself to this agenda, the development agenda of the people of South Sudan, within the context of Agenda 2063, the African Union Agenda 2063, and the Sustainable Development Goals. So that is the first thing we are working on, ensuring that there is a platform for national development, agreed upon, mobilizing every citizen of South Sudan around that agenda. And once that agenda is in place, then our own priorities is to support the items in that strategy. Great. So that's the first thing we are now embarking upon.
Yes, and as we speak right now, the whole world is, you know, affected by this pandemic, which is the COVID-19 going on. It has completely changed how things are done and, you know, how the world operates generally. How has this affected the work of the UNDP, and what is UNDP doing? What are the new actions UNDP is taking in response to the COVID-19 in South Sudan?
Since COVID-19 in South Sudan, as you rightly said, across the world, it has significantly impacted our way of life. It's devastated economies, not just South Sudan, but South Sudan's economy as well. It has exacerbated poverty. Mm-hmm. We now know over 90% of the people of South Sudan are multidimensionally poor. All of these forces are acting against us. Since the COVID, UNDP supported the government to establish the Public Health Emergency Operations Center that created surveillance and ensure that messaging goes across the country. We are working in communities as we're creating awareness on hand washing, sanitization, wearing your face mask, ensuring you maintain social distance. This is a serious health crisis across the world. And every one of us has a responsibility to ensure that we protect ourselves and protect others. We know the socioeconomic impact. UNDP did an assessment of the socioeconomic impact of COVID, and it's huge. There is a major decline in production of some of the resources the country had, oil that it depends on, agriculture. Many of these economic resources are being stored, and we need to revitalize those. The vaccine is here, although it hasn't got to us yet. It's coming. I want to encourage every citizen, if you have opportunity to take the vaccine, please do, for yourself, for your family, for the people you interact with, so that we can get back to normalcy and begin to build build the society that we are determined, all of us, you especially, to build for yourselves and for posterity.
Yes, and as we talk about COVID, there are quite a lot of things. Of course, other things didn't stop. Like in South Sudan right now, there's the peace implementation going on. There's poverty you did mention earlier. There's food insecurity in most parts of the country, and diseases, sickness of other diseases and sickness all going at the same time. How do we find a way in addressing these particular, you know, other obstacles facing the country in this period of COVID-19? How do we find a way to walk around all this during this COVID-19 to implement? Because if you look at, we've had a lot of excuses, we can't do this because of the COVID. They're not really excuses, but they're the reality sometimes. How do we go about it during this COVID? How do we get some other things done as well?
We, you know, when the COVID started, every health, public health crisis starts with a shock. And not, many of us did not know how to live with it. We've gone almost, we've gone more than a year now. We've learned that if we keep our social distance, if we double or we wear our masks, if we wash our hands regularly, if we ensure that our children also do the same as they interact in their schools and in their communities, we will reduce the effects of this virus on us. So it doesn't have to stop our other activities anymore, because we know, we have learned how it operates and what we need to do to mitigate its impact on us. So that, if we maintain those World Health Organization's guidelines, the lessons we've learned, then we should be able to continue our other work. We should continue society moving on. We should continue the peace process. We should continue development efforts. We cannot, we have no more excuse to say because of COVID we have to stop these things, because we now know how to live with COVID. But the exciting thing is that we are now in the phase of having vaccine. There are effective vaccines for COVID that are now coming. I understand the government is doing everything to bring in some vaccine as well. And so that is that we are slowly getting to the end, to the beginning of the end of this pandemic, and that our society can move on again. We should not stop, we should not stall the efforts that we had, the momentum we've had towards peace, the momentum we had towards prosperity in South Sudan.
Great. Now, talking about COVID, the International Women's Day is coming up on the 8th of March, just a few days to come. This is an important occasion marked in South Sudan annually. However, the day may look different this year due to the COVID-19 measures. How is UNDP contributing to this particular celebration?
The entire UN family is contributing to the celebration of International Women's Day, which is 8th March this year. And there are many reasons why we have this day. The day reminds us that women are the primary leaders of any society and of our society in South Sudan. The day reminds us that women are equal leaders in our economy and in our public sphere. So that it's time, the day should remind us, it's an opportunity for us to reaffirm our commitment to the 35% quota for women in the public sphere, in political governance. Because we've seen across the world, women's leadership is being demonstrated in the public sphere, in politics, in governance. If we are able to harness both men and women's potential and resources and leadership in our society, we stand a better chance of achieving greater prosperity. So the UN also used this day to affirm its commitment to the UN Security Council Resolution 1325 on women, peace and security. Women have suffered a lot in violent and conflict situations, but also women have demonstrated they can become peace leaders, they can become mediators, they can help us resolve conflict. So this is the commitment that we have and that the day reminds us to continue to affirm our commitment to achieving these goals in South Sudan and across the world, in many parts, in many countries as well.
Now let's talk about the role UNDP here is playing, especially we are in a time where the state governments are being formed in the implementation process of the peace agreement. Of course, as it moves forward in terms of governance and accountability as one of the clauses or the chapter in the revitalized peace agreement, how is UNDP contributing to this?
UNDP is determined to work with the government in its institution-building effort. States are vibrant when they have institutions that are functioning. We are currently working with the Ministry of Finance and the Commission on Revenue to help at the state level build their revenue mobilization capacity, non-oil revenue, so that you can also look at other sources of revenue. We're working with the states at the state level in public financial management, building institutions and systems in public financial management. You and I know that many of the mistakes across our continent is how we manage public resources. And if we are able to resolve that, especially at the state level, that already builds solid foundation. And if you have functioning states, the counties are effective, functioning, providing service delivery, you stand a better chance of bringing the people close to their state, to their government. It also helps us resolve the errors we made in many countries as well, in centralizing the state. That everything happens in the capital. Nothing happens elsewhere. So we are trying to work on the institutions building. We're working with the Ministry of Justice on building access to justice and rule of law across the length and breadth of the country. We've had mobile courts, we have special courts that are functioning, and we want to be able to strengthen those and build institutions. You know, if you have societies where there is recourse, where when there is a problem, someone can find a solution to it, you stand a better chance of building civic trust and building cohesive society. So that's what we're working on. We're also working to support the government on climate security. You know, South Sudan is among some of the most vulnerable countries now when it comes to climate risks. And we want to be able to work with the government to harness the institutions and communities as well to build climate resilience. UNDP cannot do any of this by itself. Foremost, it is UNDP's culture and modus operandi is to accompany the government and its people in their agenda for development. That's one. Secondly, UNDP is a member of the UN family and of the international community. And we try to work in partnership, not in competition, in collaboration. So we are forging, since I came, discussing with my colleagues in other agencies, so that we begin to have joint initiatives that will maximize our impact in support to the country's development. And those are the areas that we continue to work. And I very much look forward to visiting the country, the states, the counties, to interact with the people and to hear their development aspirations and their commitment to peace.
All right. Dr. Doe, just before you go, what will be your final remarks, especially looking forward? What will you be putting as priorities? And, of course, your final remarks to our listeners.
I want to thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. I want to thank the government for giving me the opportunity to serve here in this beautiful country. My final comment is that, you know, every time, I have lived in many countries and I've taught in many countries, but every time they talk about Africa, they say Africa has potential. Potential. We have been trapped in the potential mindset. With all of the vast resources, the immense diaspora human capital that South Sudan have, here is our opportunity to turn potential into reality, to actualize our potential. The day of Africa being just a continent of potential has got to stop. And South Sudan can be a leader on that path.